Counsel, Justice Miller Lerman is recused from this matter, so we will have no WebEx contribution, I believe, from anyone. Judge Smith from the First Judicial District is District Court Judge from the First Judicial District is going to join the court for this argument. And with those comments, counsel, we have, is it Ms. Barger? Good morning to you. You're appearing pro hoc.
Good morning. Try to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Very good. That's fine. And before you begin, do either counsel have any questions? Very good. Then Ms. Barger, you may proceed.
May it please the court. Jessica Barger for Navistar. Has this court held in Lisiak? Quote, if a party could simply avoid its contractual bargain by suing in tort, which often offers more generous terms of recovery, then the effectiveness of contract law would be reduced. That is what this case is about. Navistar and Nationwide entered into an agreement, a limited warranty, which disclaimed all other representations, and Navistar made no other promises as to the trucks. Navistar had repair and replace. Navistar, the record reflects, honored that repair and replace.
You referred to the disclaimer of any other warranties. You haven't assigned an error, have you, that the existence of that clause precludes either the fraudulent concealment verdict or the breach of warranty verdict?
Your Honor, not specifically, that we have the economic loss doctrine, which would preclude, in our view, the fraudulent concealment, and we have the failure of essential purpose, where we believe that the benefit of the bargain was sufficient, and but there was no pre-suit notice.
Neither one of those arguments depends on the existence of that disclaimer of warranty language. Is that correct?
Correct, Your Honor. The claim here, what Navistar or what Nationwide was doing, is they are trying to get out of that contractual bargain. They're trying to get out of that contractual bargain by bringing this claim for a benefit that it did not bargain for. In my limited time, I'm going to focus on why we believe that this court should reverse and render a take-nothing judgment in favor of Navistar on both of the liability claims. But at the very least, if this court disagrees with us on one of the claims, there's insufficient evidence to support the lost profit damages, and those should be reversed and rendered. I'd like to turn to the economic loss doctrine. The economic loss doctrine, this court has articulated a very clear, a very straightforward rule. The economic loss doctrine bars claims where either a defective product caused damage or the breach of an alleged contractual duty.
You might find it more clear than I do. In reading Lisiak, there's the reference to caused by a defective product, but there's also a reference to the product's liability context. And as I read the briefs, both parties can point to some language in Lisiak and argue that it supports their understanding of the economic loss doctrine. So why, beyond that language, should we read Lisiak in the manner that you do?
Well, Lisiak sets forth the policy that the state of Nebraska has very beholden to, which is the freedom of contract. And let's get into the position that Nationwide is taking. They're taking that this economic loss doctrine, as Your Honor suggested, only applies to strict liability. But Lisiak wasn't concerned with the demarcation between strict product liability and contract. In fact, it made a specific comment and said it was concerned with the demarcation of contract and tort. And Lisiak dealt with applying the doctrine to a negligence claim, not a strict liability claim. If the court in Lisiak, in the procurement opinion, wanted to limit it, it could have. But instead, it announced where a defective product caused harm only to itself, unaccompanied by other personal injury or damage to property, contract law provides the exclusive remedy. When the defective product causes harm only to itself, loss is one of the benefits of the bargain, which is essence, a warranty action. That is.
Aren't the factual allegations here that essentially we would never have entered into this contract if the other side had not been truthful with us? If Navistar had not been truthful with us about the testing and so forth.
All of the allegations in their pleadings pertain to things that go to the quality of the products, which is what, if it is a claim or goods where the quality of the products, which they're alleging is the quality of the product or the product or the engine or the life of the engine wasn't sufficient, that in and of itself should be barred by the economic loss rule. Lisiak.
The recovery was on fraudulent concealment, correct? Not fraudulent misrepresentation. So do I have that?
On fraudulent concealment. And I don't think there's a distinction between the two in that if you are talking about misrepresentations or fraudulent concealment, I think that this court's opinion and Nathan, which was written by Justice Castle, I think in that case where it says it didn't talk about the economic loss doctrine, but the same context would apply because the fraud claim is duplicative of a contract claim, even though the misrepresentations arose before the purchase agreement was signed. Here, the same thing. Navistar's alleged promises regarding the existence of any defects were subject to these same written representations in the warranties. So I think the Nathan case is one case that this court can look at. And I think that also Lisiak sources. I think that Lisiak talks about the Heron Tool case and several other sources where it gets into the quality of the goods. If we're talking about the quality of the goods or the subject matter of the contract, it would obviate the whole freedom of contract.
Lisiak cites Heron Tool?
Heron Tool.
Where would I find that?
It adopted that rule, Your Honor.
It adopted the Huron Tool rule?
I mean, it cites to Huron Tool and the Giles case and the body and the law, the basically the.
But the Huron Tool rule talks about whether the fraud is interwoven with the contract or extraneous from the contract. I don't see any discussion of fraud at all in Lisiak.
There is no fraud. There is no discussion in fraud in Lisiak. But what the plaintiffs are trying to do here, the plaintiffs would like this court to take and make that fraud exception to Lisiak. And that would alleviate the whole freedom of contract. And I think that gets into the Tennessee opinion out of Milan, which does talk, and it talks about Navistar's testing, pre-contract misrepresentations about the characters of goods. And if you have this narrow, if you have a fraud exception, because there is different ways to adopt this, there's a no fraud exception, there's a broad fraud exception, and there's the limited fraud exception. And it says to claim the promise is independent of a contract simply because it was spoken for prior to the formation of the contract would open the door to tort liability for pre-contractual negotiations that were eventually enshrined into a contract. This exception would swallow the rule. We decline to endorse such an exception for the quality of goods. So I think the only way to balance, and that's the only way to balance that this state's freedom of contract and the abhorrence to fraud, would to say that if it's interwoven with the contract, then it would be barred by the economic loss.
I know you want to reserve rebuttal time, but to briefly address your assignment regarding mistrial.
Yes, Your Honor. Briefly, I'm going to address what happened is there was Juror Johnson. Juror Johnson had some communications with the bailiff, and the bailiff basically came and said that we have a holdout, and we had objected to letting go Juror Johnson at that time. Juror Johnson, during deliberations, and the court then decided to make a decision to let Juror Johnson go and bring back an alternate who had already been dismissed after the jury has been deliberating for 2 hours. And we believe that this violates.
Wasn't there a hearing that you were involved with before the juror was released?
Well, before the juror Johnson was released, yes, there was a hearing. We objected to that, and during that hearing before the juror was released.
And what does juror Johnson say during that hearing?
She said during that hearing, she specifically said that she couldn't deal with anything anymore. And she was very emotional and very sympathetic specifically. I don't know word for word, but she said.
I mean, does she say something like.
She had heightened anxiety and she was very emotional. She was exhausted and she couldn't deal with the other jurors.
But does she say something along the lines of, I can't do this. I can't render a fair verdict. And isn't that the kind of thing that jurors get discharged for all the time?
Well, she was the holdout at the time, Your Honor. I see that I'm almost out of time, but I'll finish my thought. She was the holdout at the time, and she communicated that to the bailiff, which was in violation of this state statutes in communication with the bailiff and the juror. And not only that, combined with, you know, dismissing the juror would be error, we believe, and at least for a new trial.
Thank you very much. Mr. Lassiter, good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court. Shed, I'm Lawrence Lassiter. I'm here for your appellees and your cross appellants, Nationwide and Jasper. As you said, we both cited the Lisiak case, both trying to interpret it in the way we think it helps us. You're going to get to interpret the case and tell us what it really means right now. Let me talk about public policy and the economic loss doctrine. Because normally only the unicameral gets to impose taxes on Nebraskans. But if you expand the economic loss doctrine, as the Navistar people are asking you to do, to effectively eliminate fraud claims in the context of commercial transactions, you will be putting a tax on every small business in this state.
Nationwide argues that the fraud claim and the fraudulent concealment claim and the breach of warranty claim are essentially duplicative, that it's the same actions on the part of Navistar breached, resulted in both the fraud and the breach of warranty. How do you respond to that? Are we looking at separate acts that form the basis for those claims, or are they the same act?
They're entirely separate. If there wasn't a warranty, if Navistar had never given one, the fraudulent concealment claim would be exactly the same. It's all based upon material information that Navistar had a duty to disclose before there was any purchase or lease of any of the trucks.
This goes to the evidence in the record about Navistar had done testing and they knew the trucks would only last so long, but they didn't provide this information to your clients.
That's correct. And Navistar does not challenge the factual or legal sufficiency of the jury's verdict, the jury's finding that there was fraudulent concealment. That's not an issue in the appeal. The facts were decided by the jury. Navistar committed fraud, but they want you to give them a free pass for that. And I want to talk about the public policy, because they keep talking about the sacredness of the demarcation between contract and tort. I'm going to turn to somebody who's a lot smarter than I am to tell you what that really means. In their briefs, they repeatedly cite Judge Posner from the Seventh Circuit and his Alltech decision, where he waxes eloquently about the economic loss doctrine but doesn't actually apply it. They quoted some stuff that he said. I'm going to quote you something that they didn't put in their briefs. If commercial fraud is to go completely by the boards, as a literal reading of some of the economic loss cases might suggest, then prospective parties to contracts will be able to obtain legal protection against fraud only by insisting that the other party to the contract reduce all representations to writing. And so there will be additional contractual negotiations, contracts will be longer, and in short, transaction costs will be higher. And the additional costs will be incurred in the making of every, and he puts that word in context, every commercial contract, not just the tiny fraction that end up in litigation. What Judge Posner is saying is if you expand the economic loss doctrine to do away with fraud claims like the Supreme Court of Tennessee just did, Nebraska businesses need to lawyer up. They need to have lawyers vetting every one of their contracts. They need to do due diligence. They need to do extra negotiations. That's what I mean by a tax. It's a transfer tax on our businesses, but the revenue doesn't go to the Treasury. It goes to lawyers, law firms. So as a matter of economics, the result that they're asking you for today is bad public policy.
You made reference to the Tennessee case. Is the case in front of us today part of a series of similar cases against Navistar?
Yes, there's a whole bunch. There was a class action. There are a whole bunch of these cases around the country. The jury in Tennessee, for a trucking company, they got similarly defrauded. Jury found in favor of the plaintiff. We represent a trucking company in Ohio. That case is now up at the Ohio Supreme Court, where we also won a verdict there. I encourage you to read the Milan decision. That's the Tennessee case. You'll see pages and pages where the Supreme Court details Navistar's fraud, effectively the same fraud they perpetrated here. And in that case, again, they didn't challenge the factual or legal sufficiency of the jury's finding. In that case, the Milan Trucking unfortunately bought 243 of these trucks instead of just the, what, two dozen that Nationwide and Jasper had.
Are there other opinions that might be helpful to us to read in this series of cases?
I mean, I think you should read the Milan case and see what the Tennessee Supreme Court did. And the effect of it is what Judge Posner said is going to happen. Now, Tennessee businesses, the courthouse door has been slammed shut on a business that's been defrauded in Tennessee. You have to decide if you want to do that here in Nebraska, whether that's a good idea, or if you get defrauded in pre-contractual fraud, whether you can still come to court. Another decision, the one in Ohio, is called Dutch Made. I think we cited this in our briefs. The Ohio Supreme Court took that case. We won the appeal in the Court of Appeals. Now the Ohio Supreme Court wants to look at it. In Ohio, the economic loss doctrine doesn't apply because they don't apply it to fraud claims. It's like Texas, which is where I'm from. I'm a Texas lawyer, originally from Iowa, but I've been in Texas 30 years. You come to Texas and you defraud one of our companies, our Supreme Court says you're answerable to the tort of fraud. You'll have to pay economic losses. And you get punitive damages in Texas, which we don't have to worry about here.
Could you, in the time that's remaining, could you address or respond to Navistar's argument that you didn't prove your lost profit damages? And specifically in their brief, they mentioned that, you know, the evidence that you put forth depended on a number of assumptions. And can you respond to that with reference to our case law about whether assumptions like that are permitted?
Sure. The cases that they cite are basically where someone is just guessing, speculating about what might have happened in the future. And lost profits are different than a lot of other damages because they're necessarily something of an estimate. But what the courts have said repeatedly is you have to have some facts and figures from which a reasonable jury could reach a reasonably certain, or maybe it's reasonable certitude, I think is the language that's in the case law. And here you had facts and figures, an awful lot of them. All the down days that these trucks experienced, that comes out of Navistar's own records.
You had the down days, but you don't have a comparison of what an ordinary, how many days an ordinary truck would be down.
Well, right?
You have data about, so this is how much money we make per load, but you don't have data about whether there was a load that needed to be taken that day or whether there wasn't a backup truck. There are some assumptions built into that, aren't there? And why is that not problematic?
Navistar brought its own accountant, a forensic accountant, and Mr. Rodney Sowards, and he testified. And he talked to the jury about all of that stuff. Navistar got to cross-examine Kathy Rice, our accounting expert. All of that information This was something that the jury got to consider when it decided whether or not it could come to a conclusion with respect to lost profits. They asked Ms. Rice about her calculations with respect to downtime, with respect to other trucks. So that was all before the jury. The numbers aren't just assumptions. We have an actual number based upon the financial records that calculates the average amount that a truck, had it been working, should have earned on a particular day. This is not complete speculation. It's not the case whose name escapes me now with the store that was going to expand. And they just basically multiplied it by square footage. You have actual financial information that says this is how much money a truck earns when it's out on the road hauling.
There's some goods. Similarity isn't there, because the Nevada Bob's golf case, they had data of this is how much we'll make with this square footage, and we can figure out the lost profits by extrapolating that out to the additional square footage.
Yeah, and the court said, no, you can't do that.
Right.
But because you don't know if it's going to be the same thing. You don't know, are you going to be selling something different in the new space than what you were selling in the old space? Here, we know exactly what these trucks would have been doing if they weren't sitting in the repair shop. You know exactly what they were going to be doing. They were going to be hauling goods, just like they were on the days that they weren't sitting in the repair shop. You can make that calculation. You can make that
before your time completely elapses. With respect to the request for mistrial, and as I understand it, there was an alternate juror who was in fact discharged before the jury began deliberations, and then was reinstated after one of the jurors. Do I have the facts wrong or right?
No, that's not correct. He was not discharged. Judge Randall sent him home, but it's in the record. Judge Randall specifically said, you are not discharged. You are still under the same rules about how you can't talk to anybody about this case. Everything that we instructed you from the first day you were here. Mr. Barta, the bailiff, will call you when those restrictions are lifted, when the case is done.
Okay.
And after Juror Johnson ran from the jury room in hysterics, they called the other juror and asked him to come back.
In Nebraska civil practice, do we have a statutory basis that you're aware of for appointment of alternate jurors?
I didn't look into that. I just know that they do it.
I know, I've done it.
But and they do it for this first specific purpose. And,
all right, thank you.
So we don't waste everybody's time. Anything else? I got a lot more to say, but I'll sit down. I thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. So that concludes arguments in Nationwide Transportation Inc. versus Navistar Inc. And that also includes arguments for the day. So, counsel, you are excused and the court is adjourned.